Thank you. Thank you so much, Hans, and good morning, everyone. It's great to be back. And first, a real session on primary financial statements where we are getting to grips with the feedback we have received on the exposure draft and have three very exciting topics for you today. We will start re-deliberations on proposals for subtotals, focusing on operating profits, the star of the show, how I like it to call it, and followed by a second closest star of the show, which is management performance measure proposals, which will be later presented by Nick. And finally, we'll also discuss proposals relating to the statement of cash flows on the project. So I just want to mention before I hand over to Karlene to start us on paper 21A, we had a discussion about the project planning with ASAP last week, and I'm glad to say that ASAP was generally supportive of the direction the board has taken. We had some exciting ranging discussions on some topics, including management performance measures scope. So I'm really looking forward to that discussion later with the board. But I will stop now, and I will hand to Karlene to introduce the first paper.
Good morning, everyone. So as Aida said, Agenda Paper 21A is the first in a series of papers that we plan to bring to the board to re-deliberate its proposals to introduce defined subtotals and categories in the statement of profit or loss. And this first paper focuses on operating profit. Now, in the first section of the paper, we recommend the board proceed with its proposal to require all entities to present an operating profit subtotal, noting that most respondents agreed with the board's reasons for this proposal. However, we do plan to have a discussion at a later meeting about how an entity should present subtotals that are equal or almost equal to each other. So that brings us to the first question for the board on page 8, which is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation to proceed with its proposal to require all entities to present an operating profit subtotal in the statement of profit or loss? So with that, we'll open up for discussion.
Well, I see complete silence, and I guess that is a motion of approval. Yes, can I just see who supports the staff's recommendation that we proceed as we intended?
13.
Okay. Go on, Karlene.
That's a great start. So now that we have considered whether the board should require and define operating profits, we move on to how to define operating profit. So there were some types of income and expenses for which there was general consensus among respondents that they should not be included in operating profit. And those are investing, financing, income tax, and discontinued operations. And so we recommend that the board confirm that these types of income and expenses should not be classified in the operating category. And I would just like to highlight that we're planning to discuss a few linked topics in future board meetings. So we will discuss in a future meeting the exact definitions of investing and financing, whether investing and financing should be separate categories or not, and the classification of investing and financing items that arise from an entity's main business activities. So that brings us to the second question on page 12. Does the board agree with the staff recommendation to confirm that the following types of income and expenses shall not be classified in the operating category? A, investing, B, financing, C, income tax, and D, discontinued operations. So I'll stop there and open up for discussion again.
Okay, Mary.
Karlene, in agreement with your recommendations, a primary reason for
putting up my hand is to ask a question about paragraph 36D, like David, which is one of the items that you say you're planning to come back on at another meeting, and that's to reconsider whether to allow income and expenses from some associates and joint ventures to be classified in operating for entities with specific main business activities. The only reason I'm raising a question is I thought that we had, you know, I know that we haven't yet considered the integral, non-integral, but I thought that from last month's overview, that there was a very strong message about excluding equity method from operating because of it being net, not gross, and a number of other reasons. And I was a little curious as to why we were planning to reconsider that. And I guess, is it just for a narrow set of activities for which investing is a main business activity?
Yes, that's right. So we're definitely not reconsidering for all entities whether they can classify equity accounted associates and joint ventures in operating profit. It's just that we received feedback that for a specific set of activities, so some entities invest in associates and joint ventures as a main business activity. For example, I think in the insurance industry and some other investing type businesses, and they argued that it would be sort of counterintuitive that investments that are accounted for under IFRS 9 would be in operating profits, or they would be allowed to include them. And then subsidiaries would be in operating profits, but what sort of the category in between of equity accounted associates and joint ventures would not be eligible to be included in operating profit. And so it's for that specific subset of entities that we would potentially consider whether to include in operating profit.
Yeah. Okay. And it's expectations management, both of me and of others, you know, and of people watching the meeting, et cetera, because I just did have a bit of concern that was running counter to the overwhelming nature of the feedback we had. Thank you.
Okay, Nick?
Thanks, Hans. Just to follow up on that, I think it's very good to reaffirm that message that we have heard, that in virtually all circumstances, a desire to exclude income and expenses from equity accounted associates and joint ventures from operating. And I think that's the message we've got loud and clear. Clearly, there's also some controversy around the term main business activities. And I see that we will come back to that at a later date. It appears that many stakeholders have equated operating with main business activities, whereas in my mind, it's always been a two-stage approach. We think of operating as being anything that's not included in other categories. And then we have a second question, which is, unless you have some activities which are your main business activities, which can be put into operating for specialist businesses. So please, we will come back to that at a later date, but otherwise, right behind the staff recommendation here.
Any other comments? No. If so, can I see support for the recommendations in question two? Okay.
So now we move on to aspects of the board's proposed definition of operating profit that were a bit more contentious for some. So many respondents, including almost all users, agreed with the board's proposed approach to define the operating category. However, some respondents preferred a narrower, direct definition of operating profit, with some suggesting operating profit should be limited to recurring income and expenses from an entity's main business activities. Now, on the basis of our analysis, we conclude that the board's proposed definition does capture the right income and expenses, and we recommend the board confirm that operating profit comprises all income and expenses arising from an entity's operations, that is, including volatile and unusual income and expenses arising from an entity's operations. And The board also confirmed that operating profit includes, but is not limited to, income and expenses from an entity's main business activities. However, we do acknowledge that further work is needed to ensure that entities can provide relevant information about income and expenses classified in the operating category. So question three on page 21 asks the board whether it agrees with the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Tadeo? Oh, sorry, Nick first.
Thanks. So we have seen a number of stakeholders ask for a measure of operating profit that seeks to reflect recurring items. And that's clearly something that the board contemplated at the start of its discussions on primary financial statements and concluded that this was really not possible to do, very difficult to come up with that conclusion. And I think that's true of many of those stakeholders asking for this, that they don't actually provide us with a workable definition of recurring. Instead, they go back and suggest that actually what would be more appropriate would be to have a management approach to define operating. And in that respect, I guess we would then lose any sense of comparability from this. There'd be some picking and choosing in terms of what would fit into operating and what wouldn't. I'm also concerned that there is a sense that by putting items outside of operating but not into financing or investing, a non-operating expenses category can become a bit of a dumping ground in its own right. Clearly, you can move items often or generally of expense into that category, is what I see in practice. And it helps you portray a more favorable margin trend over time. And I worry also leads to less accountability for items that fall into such a category. And for me, a good example would be donations. People say these aren't operating, but you are, you know, you're using the resources of the entity to make those donations. What is the purpose of them? Who is accountable for those donations? So I think there's more scrutiny and there's more comparability if we have an all-in definition of operating, which is that residual definition. Thank you.
Let me see. Tadeo.
Thank you, Hans. And thank you, Carleen and PFS team for preparing the papers. In many parts of the text, we refer to residual category. In my view, there is a presumption that all income and expenses are actually as a result of the operations of the entities. I think that in somewhere in the text it is highlighted as well. And then you exclude those related to financing, tax, some investments, continued operation. That's the category we just agreed. Therefore, the operating category is not residual. It is a default category, as it is in the exposure draft. And despite operating profit has predictive ability for future performance, that predictive value is not a characteristic of operating income or expense, as is stated in paragraph 14. In my experience, unfortunately, is not uncommon, especially in income statements presented by function, a line of administrative expenses like clockwork, and then a line of other income and expenses, negative in one year, positive in another year. I mean, that these are real results from the operation. You can't just put it out when you are considering. The point is that some unusual, volatile, non-business income and expenses occur as a result of the operation, and I believe it should be dealt with in the note. I agree that we can work better the meaning of main business activities that just Nick said to make this point clearer. I will make this point for question four, but summing up, I support the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, Sue.
Thanks. I agree with what's proposed in question three. And I think it's important that operating profit is inclusive in this way. I think what we are dealing with here personally and some of the comments that we're receiving is that some others would have preferred that we went with an approach where operating profit was really capturing what they see as core or recurring. So they're really building a different model than ours, whereas I think we are trying to focus on a model where, as Tadal says, the sort of default is that everything in P&L is to do with operating, and then we take out the pieces that are distinct because they're investing, financing, taxes, etc. And I think that is a valid approach. And I think that some people are approaching this sort of saying that operating profit is too important to be a residual. But I think that it's appropriate for it to be an inclusive number. And I think some of the points that are brought out in the paper about the fact that normal things are volatile and unpredictable is something that is just life, and that should be highlighted. One thing people do focus on quite a bit, though, I think, is that they see that because our operating profit number will be quite a comprehensive number, if you like, as a result of approaching it this way, there will be aspects of that that they might like to emphasise or de-emphasise. But I think our approach of having an inclusive operating profit number is the right one, and I think we should resist the temptation to try and expect too much of the face of the income statement. So, of course, there's other aspects of information that's interesting to understand, you know, what's core, people's minds, what's got predictive ability, et cetera, et cetera. But I think of the proposals in this PFS document as a package. So we're trying to highlight particular aspects of performance with these subtotals in the on the face, and I agree with the approach being taken. We're not saying that other aspects aren't important, but we're going to try and deal with them with different mechanisms through disaggregation, through the management performance measures, and through the note disclosures such as unusual items, which we're exploring. And I think we should be disciplined and think about that package and resist the sort of calls to try and achieve too much with the subtotals on the face. Otherwise, I think we'll detract from what we're trying to do. So very strongly in support of the proposal in question three.
To which I would like to add that although we define as a residual, it is a residual that is at least roughly right, and rather than precisely wrong. As far as I know, the countries where I know that they have a direct definition of management performance, of operating profit, it is in fact a management performance measure with considerable diversity in practice and no comparability, or very little comparability. So I truly think that our approach is the way to go. We'll, I think, discuss later if there are more possibilities for management to show his own view of what they think is their operating profit. But I think this is truly the right approach. Jian Chao.
Thank you, Hans. I also support the staff's proposal. I think in relation to question 3A, because some people raised the concern about volatile and unusual income expenses, whether they should be included in the operating category or not. I really like the argument, you know, included in the paragraph 65. I think that the volatile and unusual income and expenses are inherent in an entity's, you know, operating activities, because market volatilities, operating, you know, volatilities always happen. So I think I think it's a very good argument to justify why those items should be included in the operating category. In relation to the proposal question 3B, I understand that part is mainly, you know, aiming to include those non-business income and expenses, you know, to be included in operating category. I think it's, as you mentioned, it's like an inclusive, you know, approach. But I do have two additional comments. Firstly, that I think in the future, maybe we can propose some additional explanation why those items are not arising from main business activities could be included in the operating, you know, category. To find some, you know, just like I mentioned, paragraph 65, something like that, in the basic conclusion. Second is that particularly for some companies or some jurisdictions, currently maybe local requirements in place, they require those companies to separately present those items, non-main business items, separately in the face of, you know, statement of profit and loss. So whether we can provide some guidance and to explore any possibility how to present those items. For example, some companies may continuously, you know, make some donations. Sometimes the donation is a very big number. And maybe that item, it's very difficult to fit in any functions if the company presents expenses by function. It's very difficult to fit any functions, or maybe it's difficult to fit in, you know, any normal expenses category if the company presents the expenses by nature. So I think it's worthwhile to explore to help, you know, to support entities how to present this kind of line item, or this kind of items. So I noticed that in paragraph 72AI, we didn't mention that in the future, we will explore the possibility, you know, to present those, you know, those, you know, income and expenses as a separate line item. I think it's worthwhile to explore. Thank you.
Rika.
Thank you, Hans, and thank you for today's paper to the staff. And then, so I think today's both discussion will set the scene for our future discussion. So in order to clarify and what we are discussing right now, I just want to make sure a couple of things with the staff. And the first is about paragraph 41A1. It said that both proposed definitions capture income and expense do not belong in operating profit. But I do think that the approach taken here has no intention to specifically identify those items that do not belong in operating profit. So I believe it is a kind of the natural consequence of our approach. So I prefer using include rather than capture items that do not belong in operating profit. And another thing is about paragraphs 61 and 62. I don't need your response today, but it's a kind of the request for the future meetings. So when you come back for us to discuss the investing activities again, could you please elaborate more about the distinction between investing activities and ancillary and supportive activities that can be conducted by subsidiary that are not a main business activity of the group? I think I had some confusion between the what should be categorized in investing activity, and then, but some items that's supposed to be included in the operating category in terms of the applying the definition of the investment activity. So, if you can bring this back again in the future, that will be really helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rika. Anne?
Thanks, Hans. When I read the letters, there obviously are people that we've seen in the comment letters and heard in the outreach that feel really strongly about this operating profit directly defined. But I agree with Sue that they're actually approaching operating profit differently in the way we're approaching. So they have a concept of operating profit which is different to ours. And I agree with staff and other board members who are saying, let's stay with ours for the reasons we need to. Because when I think about the people that have this different concept often it seems to be about wanting rules and checklists so they can have the things they want in there and keep out the things they don't want, which is a very different concept to ours. So with our concept, we do need to have these other disclosures to communicate the details of the things that are in operating profit. And that's where these are things that the staff are going to bring back to us. There are methods people already use to communicate the detail of the line items that may be on the face, or it may be more detail for the notes. And paragraph 72 that Jen Chow just referred to has got some of those details in there. But what that makes me think about, of course, is this is really going to make us get much more thoughtful about how digital financial reporting works. Because I think as a board, we think in paper-based, and we have paper-based, and the taxonomy team deal with a paper-based approach. And I think we're going to be very challenged as we try and deal with the providing the additional information about the subtotals and the notes, about whether things are on the face in the notes, which matters for paper-based but not for digital. So I think we're going to have lots of challenges coming because we need to think about digital reporting as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Anne. Bruce?
Thanks very much, Hans. Interestingly, I come from a jurisdiction in South Africa where we've been grappling with this for a long time, in that we've got our own version of headline earnings. And I mean, it's just literally become a list of adjustments people have made. And I guess to me, that's always a good warning, because I'm not a big fan of it, that trying to continually adjust out really can get to a stage where it becomes very difficult to actually understand what the figure means at the end and how people are using it. Just in terms of the questions we asked here, I mean, for me, I'm very strongly in support of what the staff have said. I mean, I think that we've taken a decision that the operating is going to be a residual. And I think that the moment we accept that it's going to be the residual category we've got there, we have to accept there are going to be things in there that are volatile, that are going to create some sort of unusual items. And I'm not worried about that. I know some of you previously mentioned it. We're going to deal with this from a disclosure point of view, because these are items that need to be disclosed clearly for anybody, for any user to understand. So it doesn't make me upset that we're including those within there. I just think what's interesting about this is, and I know we touch a bit on this in the next section, but kind of folds into the two to me. A lot of the challenges I see with this all come into that issue around the kind of main business activities part of the definition. Because as soon as you say that, and as soon as we're using that as part of the definition, then that part in 3A comes up and everybody jumps up and down and says, oh, but hang on, these items aren't part of my main business activities. These are outside of that. And that's why, I mean, I'm sorry if I'm jumping forward, but I know it kind of slips between the two. I'm not a great fan of having that word main business activities in there, because I think we do have that conflict between that portion and the residual. Rather, let's just call it a residual, and then at least people understand what's going in there. I think that's what's going to give rise to the conflict we're going to see on this.
Okay. Mary?
Similar message to Bruce, although I thought about it in a very different way. Again, overall, support the staff recommendation. And I think echoing something Anne said, this is one where we can't find a happy medium. We have to make a decision that it either is or is not an all-in or a management approach. And if you know, and we proposed, and the staff recommends that we continue to take the it's a residual approach. And I think maybe echoing something that Sue said about not expecting too much of the face of the P&L, we also have to be clear not to dilute that message. And actually, I think in terms of drafting, these are not specific words, but it may be time to go back and look at what we did in IFRS 15, the revenue standard, where we had a very explicit statement up front about there being a five-step model. And I think it feels almost like we need a statement that said we are taking the approach of defining what is not in operating by defining positively financing and investing, and that operating is a residual, and that means that it will include volatile or unusual items as well as things that may be seen by some as peripheral to the main business activities of the entity, and just make it an absolutely positive statement And I you know, because Carlene, at times reading the paper, when we would talk about the definition of operating, I began to worry that we were trying to soften the fact that what we have is essentially a description rather than a definition. I don't want to characterize anything as a definition in the sense that I don't want to start arguments in 5 years' time about here's an item that does not meet the definition of operating, and so therefore it shouldn't be in there, and it doesn't meet the definition of investing or financing either, and so I have to find somewhere else to put it. I think that's why I say think about the kind of overview that we had at the beginning of IFRS 15 about the approach to revenue, so it just makes it absolutely clear in the standard itself, not just in the basis, what our approach is with respect to operating, in it being the residual and it including those volatile or unusual items. A couple of other things that have come up in today's discussion. When we do talk about main business activities, Rika's point is something I haven't thought about in a while, and I just wanted to flag as something that I think will be important but perhaps challenging for us, and that is what are the main business activities of a group? If a group has, let's say, a subsidiary or a few subsidiaries that conduct certain activities that are their main business activity, does that carry forward into the group as a main business activity or not? And I haven't thought enough about that issue recently, but Rika's comments certainly sparked that. But I think my main point, and it follows on most immediately what Bruce was saying about, let's be very clear and specific in our messaging about the approach we've taken so that we don't set up generations of arguments about whether something meets the quote definition of operating, because if we're very clear that it's the residual and you have to meet the other definitions for it to be out, I think we will save everybody a lot of pain and suffering, and we will not have to put the interpretation committee on full-time payroll, which is, I think, what would happen otherwise. Thank you.
Yeah, very good comments, Mary. Françoise.
Thank you. Well, today I'm going to be disciplined and comment on question three only and wait for the other comments. So very shortly, I have no hesitation supporting the staff recommendation for all the arguments that have already been explained either on the paper or in the discussion. In fact, I asked for the floor in reaction to a number of comments I heard in the discussion that I listened very carefully. And I would like us and the staff to consider what is already planned to be considered in the future, and then Chichao have already referred to paragraph 72, how we can ease the restrictions, the prohibitions, implicit or explicit prohibitions that we have included, and not already indicating that whatever disaggregation happens, has to be in the notes, because I think we have to really very carefully consider the feedback we received. We have already at present a principle, in fact, in IS1 that it's not it's a principle requirement that relevant subtotals should be provided, and of course it's subtotals that fit the overall structure of the income statement. And I would encourage us to consider the comments we've received and to reconsider these implicit and explicit prohibitions that we have included in our proposals in order to fit better with that principle that we already have. And really a lot of misunderstanding that have, I mean, the opposition, in fact, that I've heard to our proposals and very strong words like we are going to be prevented from presenting a relevant income statement, which is a very strong message to be received. I think we have to consider that with an open mind in order to give the full force to the requirement we have and eliminate artificial restrictions, prohibitions that we have introduced.
Okay, thank you, Françoise. Tom?
Yeah, so really good paper to the staff dealing with a complex issue. I agree with what everyone else has said, that operating needs to be our first cut and it needs to have everything that goes in operating, the volatile ones, the perhaps non-core ones, all those things need to go in. And I also agree, and several people made the comment, for example, Sue talked about, you know, and the staff talk about immediately after fall, paragraph 68, about what can we do for these other dimensions of information that people are interested in, for example, core, non-core, volatile, less volatile, more or less persistent. And so I think disclosure does become critical, and I think we have some good ideas. I just wanted to make two small comments. I think in paragraph 68, although later it's addressed by the staff, is I think it'd be good to talk about operating being defined properly as our first cut, and it needs to be faithfully representative, and therefore it needs to be complete, neutral, and free from error. And complete especially means it has to bring in all those volatile items and so on. But I would like to stress that it's the first cut, and there are other ways to cut the information, which is what many of these people want, and that we are providing an avenue for them. And as Sue said, we've got disaggregation, we've got MPMs, and we've got unusual items at a minimum. The other thing I wanted to highlight was paragraph 70B. And I've noticed this in both our written documents and also in our presentations, that we increasingly rely on MPMs as part of this exercise of general disaggregation. So we say the entity can use an MPM. When we started, we weren't thinking of those terms. Now, personally, I agree with this. I think it's a really valuable tool that entities use. I think we're going to bring transparency and audit, so I think it's a good thing. But I do want to draw people's attention to the fact that we're seeing this more and more as a useful tool for entities to bring in these other dimensions of information and to be informative about them in a way that's transparent and verifiable. And I think that speaks a little bit to some of the stuff that's going to come into the next question. I have a couple more comments when we get there. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Zach.
Thanks, Hans. So I just wanted to chime in with a similar comment, and I'll try and be brief, which is coming into the project midstream, one of the things that really drew me to the project was the idea that comparable structures aid users of financial statements, and that growing a body of comparable structures has immense value that's diffuse, but very real. And I think this gets to the crux of what a comparable structure is this definition of a residual definition of operating profit, where you know where everything is going to be, but then you create avenues where the information within that can be further disclosed and people can make their own decisions. And I think that's what the project successfully navigated with the current structure. So I'm strongly supportive. But I do think being quite clear that we are valuing comparability on the face and location of items being similar across countries is worth emphasizing, that that's the value judgment that underlies most of the project. And then really emphasize to those who would like to present this information that all the tools we've discussed, in particular disaggregation, is a wonderful tool. I think similar to what Francois was saying, my views have softened on the mixing of function and nature, because as I've heard examples from particular preparers, I think they are providing more information sometimes. And there are ways to do it where you talk about the nature of items within a function that might be valuable. We actually seem to require people to disclose some items by nature, even if their income statement is by function. So I think that's a fact we need to reconcile. But I do think, you know, we are providing avenues and we should continue to explore working on those avenues so that better information gets conveyed within a consistent structure, because I think that's the highest value add to the community, both preparers and users going forward.
Okay, thank you, Zach. Martin?
Yeah, thanks, Hansman. I wanted to make similar comments as Bruce and Mary. I think many people have commented on that and said operating should be focusing on core business, main business activities. And I think a little bit is also, I think, our fault, because we have used now operating profit as a word where many preparers, users, others have used for decades, but then they have used it for their core business and not for a kind of residual value. And therefore, I think we have to work, and what we are doing with the next question is on this possible to clarify the definition of operating profit. I would not go so far and say we must use a different word, because we have made the decisions we should use operating profit. But we should not forget that really people have used that word for a different content for many, many, many years. And therefore, I think we have to work a little bit harder on how we define that and clarify really the definition. And also what Sue has said, I think we should sell more the overall package, because we don't lose information. We then have this part which is maybe not core. We have the unusual in different parts or MPMs. And I think that is, I think the overall package is, I think, a good package. And therefore, I totally agree that we should stay with the residual method for that. But I think we have to work a little bit harder on make that clearer to our stakeholders. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Martin. Nick?
Thanks, Hans. I don't want to initiate a lengthy discussion about mixed measurement today, because I know the staff intend to come back to that. But just building on the comments from Anne about the importance of digital reporting and the comments from Zach in terms of comparable structures, I think one of the huge frustrations that users have today is when, let's say, they look at a set of a P&L, which seems to be by function, and within its cost of sales includes depreciation, and then another company, another entity that again appears to be by function, has a cost of sales, but it has a separate line for depreciation. It completely undermines any sense of comparability for that P&L. It undermines the use of digital reporting. It makes it exceedingly difficult. So there's some elements of mixed measurement that users find very frustrating, but that's not to say all elements of mixed measurement are frustrating. And I'm certainly sympathetic to some of the things Francoise was saying, that some of those do certainly add value and utility in terms of being on the face of the P&L. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we then go to answering the question? Can I see support?
Thirteen.
Okay. So, Carleen, continue, please.
So, finally, we consider whether the board should explore defining operating profit directly, as suggested by some respondents. And in our view, the board should not explore developing a direct definition, because it's unlikely that the board would be able to develop a robust direct definition that would achieve comparability. And so question 4A on page 24 asks the board whether it agrees with that staff recommendation. And then question 4B asks whether the board has any comments on the possible approaches set out in Appendix D to clarify the definition of operating profit in drafting. But we're not asking the board to make any decisions on the drafting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Francoise?
I totally support having the operating category being the default category. And I mean, the argument put in 81C to me is the main one. An entity runs operations unless it invests or seek finance. So I'm comfortable with that. I ask for the floor to respond to the call for comments on the possible approaches to drafting. And in fact, my comment is that, in my view, this is just very too premature to consider, because I would expect that in our future deliberations we question whether the notion of main business activities itself should be retained. There may be other ways articulate the exceptions for certain business models. And I don't think we are not necessarily stuck with using or referring in one way or another to main business activities. I think it has brought more problems and more confusion than it has eventually helped. So I would recommend that we eventually consider other ways.
Thank you, Françoise. Tadeu.
Thank you, Hans. I support staff's recommendation. And in relation to the proposals in the appendix, in paragraph 13, you made a good reference to the limited role of main business activities in the definition of operating profit. Its determination is important for the case where an entity invests in the course of its main business activities or provides financing to customers as a main business activity. I mean, that we do the definition defining the other categories. I think that we should consider maybe this we have in IFRS, paragraph 13. To consider this one. And just one point that is related to the question before, in terms of the full or residual, I think that's similar to, I remember one advertisement say that this biscuit sells more because it's fresh, and then it's fresh because it sells more. I mean, that it is residual because it is the default. That's the point. I mean, that we are just maybe fighting with the terms, but the question is that in principle, it is the default category. And then I think that the way that we define it, I think it's working well. Hopefully we find something that will not get some confusion in the market. Thank you.
Chencha, Rika.
Yeah, Hans, thank you. I support the staff's recommendation because I think here we need to improve the transparency and add more discipline to have a more comparable information on the face of the net income statement. So if we took the approach to define the operating profit directly by using the definition of main activities or some other way, I think we would have to develop robust requirement to ask the entity what should be included or what should be excluded from an operating category. So I believe that defining an operating profit directory would not give the same freedom and autonomy that the existing IS-1 requirements provide to the entity. So I think what the staff proposed right now can achieve our objectives in more operational and with less judgment. So I agree with the staff recommendation. And I also have some suggestion to staff. So the paper repeatedly mentioned about achieving the comparability. So considering the digital reporting as other board member mentioned, I would like to make sure how this approach works in the relevant digital reporting setting in the cost test or in the context of the comparability in the future. Thank you.
Okay. Chen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. I also support staff's recommendation. I think obviously, ideally, if we could, we can try to define the operating profit directly, but it seems that it's difficult to find a robust, sound solution to define operating profit. So I'm fine with staff's recommendation. In terms of possible approaches to how to, you know, indirectly define the operating profit in Appendix D. First, I agree with the point what, you know, Francois made, that I think it's related to the role of main business activities, not only the role play in the definition of operating profit, but also the role of main business activity play in other areas. So I think it should be clarified first, and then I think we can think about whether we should bring the notion of main business activities in the definition. Secondly, I'm thinking that although the outcome of three option approach is same, but I think one thing also, even the main business activities role is clear, I wonder whether we should address any activities in the definition, you know, where, when or where, you know, those income and expenses are rising. So this is the second one. Third one is, I think we also needed to consider, particularly one point mentioned in the approach three, whether it's possible to align the definition of operating profit to the definition of operating cash flow in IAS 7 as much as possible, because if we look at the common letters, actually many stakeholders also mention this kind of point. So I'm looking forward to future, you know, further, you know, exploration, and then we can decide which kind of approach is the best way to move forward. Thank you.
Okay, Mary.
I agree with the staff recommendation, and actually, I think given, I almost feel like given the decision we made about operating being residual, that's almost determinative here that we can't then positively define operating, because, and this is where the comments that I made earlier come in about being very, very clear and not undercutting that the statement that that we intend operating to be the residual, and therefore we intended to get things that may be seen as peripheral, as volatile, etc. A comment that came to mind as we talk about digital reporting, I'm wondering if we should start trying to train ourselves and others to think of it as digital consumption rather than digital reporting. And my reason for saying that is if I'm talking about digital reporting, I'm thinking about how do I electronically label and send out pieces of information. But I think if I think about digital consumption, a point like the one I think it was Zach made, but I'm not sure, about whether depreciation is included or excluded. If I were only looking for information that had a particular margin label, would I be aware of what is included or excluded? I think if we were thinking about tagging a paper version, that's digital reporting, then we assume that it's clear. But if you think about somebody only reaching in and selecting a piece of information in the kind of digital consumption, they may not have the context to see what is excluded because it has a separate label on it. So maybe we have to think about it that way. And then the last is going back to the comment about how we use Maine business activities, you know, the discussion of Maine business activities and its relationship to operating. I'm wondering if we should start messaging that Maine business activities, it may be a reason for bringing something additional into operating, but identification of Maine business activities is never the basis for excluding something from operating that otherwise, you know, the residual approach would require to be in there. So that and I think that's consistent with the comments that some others have made about Maine business activities and that notion as something that supports and amplifies what we're trying to get to with operating, but is not a rigid constraint on it. Because I think if we try and spend too much time defining Maine business activities to make it the core of operating, will undercut operating as the residual. Thank you.
Tom, please.
So perhaps I could pick up where Mary left off. I think the staff have done a good job, and I like their approaches. Maine business activities was a critical innovation that got us around a huge problem. We were thinking about whether we needed to exclude whole industries at one time. And Maine business activities was the tool we used to make a general standard that would apply to everyone. So it's possible we might be able to change it, but I would kind of remind everyone it was a critical tool for us moving forward, and it's a critical part of the proposed standard. And I like the staff suggestions. So first, what do I like about them? I think this, because it's a critical part of how things are defined, I don't think approach one would be appropriate. I could live with either approach two or three. I think the concerns that the staff highlight, there's a bit of a trade-off about highlighting the distinction between Maine business activities and everything else, which approach three does better. But then an argument about that this might possibly confuse people. So I'd be good with either two. Coming back to what Mary said a moment ago, and one of the ways I've looked at this, I think she said Maine business activities allow into operating but do not keep out, more or less. Is that correct, Mary? And one of the ways I thought about this is fundamentally for investing, we have two necessary conditions that are collectively sufficient. The two necessary conditions are generate a return individually and largely independently. That's an affirmative condition. And the second one is that it is not a Maine business activity. And this is a negative condition. And notice, to actually apply this condition, you have to have defined Maine business activity somewhere. And so it fits exactly with what Mary just said, because if I take the not investing and the not Maine business activities, my two nots can cancel. And it's what Mary said, Maine business activities allow you into operating. They're effectively a sufficient condition to operating. And I think the staff are basically following a path along those lines. And while they could be fine-tuned, I would encourage staff with whatever help needed to kind of follow this path rather than trying to totally reinvent things, because I think we've got it where we're going to get the right stuff in operating and we're going to get the right stuff in investing and financing. All we need to do is to figure out the right way to communicate this clearly and also with no loopholes, so there's no confusion. So in our initial wording, people were confusing that Maine business activities was a necessary condition to get into operating rather than a sufficient condition. So I just think we can do a lot with just clear wording. I think staff are moving in a very good direction, and I'd encourage us to follow this and to keep the standard whole and not start thinking about excluding a whole industry or some kind of exception like that.
Okay, Martin.
Yeah, thanks, Hans. My comment is also on this possible approach to clarify the definition. And I think the confusion really came from more or less entities or companies which don't have investing and financing as their main business activity. And they thought, okay, if we have it in the definition, then we, what we have in operating is also then not their main business activity. It is a lot of different activities, which they think is not core, whatever. And I think that caused this confusion. But we need the term main business activities because we want to bring into the operating profit then financing and investing activities from banks and where that is main business activity. So that is a conflict. But I think we should do the clarifications and saying clearly, okay, it is a kind of residual approach. And then for those entities, and then for which the main business activities is investing and financing, then they should bring these activities into operating. Then we have to use only these main business activities for this exemption, for these industries. But we're not confusing a kind of entities which have main business activities is not financing and investing, that they think, okay, they have in operating misled because it is included also other activities which they thought is not their main business activities. And therefore, I'm not agreeing with the possible approaches. I think we must have to be a little bit more clearer and distinguish really between the entities where main business activities are investing and financing, and not make it broader to all. And that is what I think. Thanks.
Nick?
Thanks. Just to build on those articulations from Martin, Mary, and Tom. I mean, I think where we are, and let's remember, I think what they describe is exactly where the board landed in the first place. Main business activities was always only a mechanism, a construct to deal with, you know, businesses which had activities which were part of their main business operations in financing and investing. It was never anything more than that. Somehow it took on a life of its own. I don't know if that's because of the first line in paragraph 46 of the ED, but I think if we can bring that clarity back to how we've worked up that definition, that will really help us and eliminate any confusion around this issue.
Okay, can I see a vote, and then I'll ask Clarine to summarize for us. Who supports question 4A?
13.
Okay, so Clarine, please.
So I think what I've heard today is definitely strong support to proceed with our approach of operating profit being defined as this all-inclusive measure, acknowledging that it may include volatile items and non-main business activities. We think that's the right approach, and any sort of more narrow definition would be inevitably some kind of management view and would be less comparable. There were lots of things that people mentioned that are important to discuss in future meetings, which we definitely take note of. So we are definitely planning to discuss other ways to communicate the different characteristics of income and expenses included in operating profit through disaggregation, both on the face and in the notes. We'll come back to the definitions of investing and financing. We'll definitely come back to the notion of main business activities, how it's defined, and also in particular to sort of clarify or better communicate how the definition works, how the mechanics of the definition work, and how main business activities come into that. Separately, we'll definitely also consider the implications of digital reporting. I don't know, Aida, did you want to add anything?
No, I think that was key. Obviously, we have heard a lot, and you know, we'll take that away I think some suggestions in particular that you have made around how to explain interrelationships, in particular relation main business activities and the definition, are really helpful. And we acknowledge the feedback that you have given us that it is, you know, perhaps premature to, you know, finish drafting this right now. And, you know, we didn't ask for decision that, but it's very helpful. So we will continue working on that as we go into next papers.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I propose we take a break, 15 minutes. Let's reconvene at 5 to 11.